Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back in. Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, where their advanced pay by TJ option can save you thousands when selling your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with us on this Wednesday morning. We'll have Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian coming up at 7:30. We'll get his thoughts on the Ja Morant situation in the NBA. And then Paul Kaharsky from PaulKaharsky.com joining the program at 8 o'clock talking Titans. So looking forward to that. Continuing the running back discussion, and Lance has brought this up a couple of times in the last couple of days. We haven't been able to get to it yet, but he says since 09, the average annual salary for a Super Bowl winning running back is $1.11 million. This from Lance on the text line. I'd have to double check
that. That's a very good stat.
That seems low, but.
It does seem low. That does seem
low. Not saying he's wrong.
But, yeah, I mean, look, you can certainly do it with the running back on the rookie deal or the de-emphasized backfield, but there have been very important running backs over the years, even recent years, that have been on Super Bowl winners and Super Bowl teams.
Josh in Kentucky says, unless you can draft an all-time great running back in the first round, it's a wasted pick. Teams can always get good value at running back in the later rounds. I'd never draft a running back until at least the second or third round unless it's 1986 and Bo Jackson is available. I would not do it. This is from Josh from Kentucky.
There's a lot of people who say this, and I get it. Now, first of all, first round, there is a difference. Like, for example, in the Chiefs, I know it hasn't worked out because he's gotten hurt. I still like the Clyde Edwards-Helaire pick at 32 for them. You know, now that's technically first round. Look, man, I know he's been hurt too, but look at how much of a difference last year did it make for the New York Giants? And think about the opener here. We're like, yeah, oh, Saquon Barkley had more impact than Derrick Henry. Get out of here, Max Kellerman.
That's right.
How much of a difference did Saquon Barkley make last year for the New York Giants? They have an okay quarterback.
Yep.
He went number two. He went number two in 2018. It's a rarity. And if you go through this list of the 2000s, it is hard. You know, Bijan Robinson now, he just went. We'll see. Yep. We'll see what that means. Zeke went number four. Do we have a problem with Zeke number four in 2016 for what he's done for them over the 10? Now, they haven't had the playoff success. Is that because they drafted him, they should have drafted someone else? And he's been awfully – he had an awfully good run.
He did.
For them. Again, you don't see too many. Anymore. So I get it. I kind of agree with you, except that sometimes you have such an incredible talent. I mean, I can't argue with Josh Jacobs at number 24 in 2019. No. That's a pretty good pick. And by the way, if you want to talk about Super Bowl teams and running backs, let's remember the Rams and that team that played one of the worst to watch Super Bowls ever against the Patriots and what they were when Todd Gurley was great.
Yep.
I think he was arguably the best player in the league in 2017. And then how limited they were because he was limited too. I mean, it's not completely black and white here.
When you started to say Super Bowl and running back, I thought you were about to take your Tom Brady disrespect to an all-time level.
Oh, yeah.
And start to tell me that Leonard Fournette won the Super Bowl for the Bucs, and I was about to be really proud of
that. Oh, my goodness.
Forget Brady. It was Fournette.
Fournette, there's another high pick, by the way.
Yeah,
high pick of a back in the 2000s, in the late teens.
Super Bowl champion,
and was important. Was not insignificant. I would actually say no. The obvious answer, though, is the defense, the pass rush won it, not Brady. But I wouldn't, I mean, that's obvious, right?
Yes, very obvious. Joe Traylon Burks, among others, speaking to the media yesterday. With veterans back around at Tennessee Titans practice facility over there. We'll get to some interesting comments on the training staff and Sean Murphy Bunting and Azeez Alshire and some things they had to say coming up here in just a few minutes. But Traylon Burks, obviously a lot on his shoulders heading into this season. He spoke to the media yesterday. You were there for it. What were some of your takeaways from what Traylon Burks had to say yesterday over at St. Thomas Sports Park?
If I can stop spilling myself. Yeah, I think Traylon Burks had the press conference that told Titans fans exactly what they want to hear. He's been here the whole time. He's in good shape. He's not dealing with the asthma anymore, which probably has something to do with conditioning. And he's locked in and in on this offense. And again, there's just more and more tempo talk with the offense. I mean, I'm all of a sudden I'm like, oh, are we gonna be watching like the 1990 Buffalo Bills out here, you know, just playing hurry up. It's interesting.
Josh Heupel and the Vols were able to take some notes at Tennessee's pro days.
Maybe.
Like, you guys go fast. How do we do that?
Maybe. The Browns offense comes to the NFL finally. How about that? They should have drafted Hendon Hooker if that was the case. But I thought that Treylon Burks said, you know, Treylon Burks had the message and the information exactly as Titans fans, you know, hope to hear it. And he sounded like a guy who learned some things as a rookie, kind of learned what you have to do to be able to perform at this level consistently and all that. And so I thought it was a very encouraging press conference from him. Also, it was an incredibly encouraging day for media. I know people really care about this. You know, I don't know what kind of GM Rand Carthon is going to be. We'll see. He clearly loves us, though. Because
that's good.
Murphy Bunting, Alshire, and Brunskill. Fantastic quotes. Like, all of us are like, oh, there's three of the top quotes in the whole locker room right now.
In a row.
All these new guys. So thank you, Rand Carthon, for helping us and thinking of us.
Media first.
Yes.
That's right.
Should say, it's exactly how Vrabel wants the team built.
Yeah, exactly. But, look, I think there is some correlation. I mean, if you're quote-unquote good with media, probably – speaks a little bit to, you know, a lively personality, and that can be good in a locker room. So I mean, you could see how all those guys would be positive additions, and it was very interesting listening to all of them.
It was, and Burks talked about, like you said, the, you know, being in a good place, preparing for year two. Talked about the conditioning and just going through the fire, you know, last year and the things that he's learned from that. And like you said, he's been around all offseason long at this point, and we've talked about how important it is to have him going this year and for him to be healthy and for him to take that next step. We'll see. We're on May 17th, but certainly it's obvious he's in a way better spot now than he was this time last offseason when we were talking about asthma and not being able to get through practices at rookie minicamp. And the quote yesterday was, I feel great running fast, not having any problems breathing, really just having fun, man. I'm in a good place, state of mind. And I'm just thankful I've been here the whole offseason, didn't go to train at the beach or anything, stayed here, wanted to stay around the facility and bond, make a connection with the coaches, but also get ahead of things that I know I'm going to be doing in the offseason. And one of the other things he talked about yesterday was running through the heat around here. He wanted to make sure he was doing that to be prepared for that too.
Yep, so he did exactly what the Titans would hope he would do. And then Glennon asked the key question, which is, so does this mean there was no hog hunting? And he's like, oh, there was hunting.
Good.
And Glennon's like, successful? Oh, yeah. Oh, it was successful. So
that's half the reason I was glad they drafted him.
Yeah. I mean, go out and hunt. Now, granted, don't eat half the hog afterward, right?
Just a quarter.
Just a quarter, yeah. And you just save it for the week. You can just put it in there.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like
put your Ziploc bag
if you are hunting hogs on foot, like there's got to be some correlation to a football drill there. Like, if you can catch this hog, you can catch that ball and get around a defender.
Or even if not, at least like conditioning. It's not bad for conditioning, right?
Those hogs can move, I would assume.
Yeah. And plus, they're strong.
Absolutely.
If you need to wrestle a hog.
Better be prepared if you're Treylon Burks and getting a little bit stronger, a little bit faster, more prepared for that hog.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be a good sign heading into the season. How many other wide receiver ones around the league do you know? They're out hog hunting with their bare hands.
If that could directly correlate to the NFL, you're talking about an all-pro. Jared from Spring Hill says, it's sad when it's news for us that our first-round receiver is finally, quote, in shape. Different expectations around here versus winning programs. Well, first of all, Jared, I mean, they have been winning.
The program.
Although they did lose seven straight games. They have been winning. Yeah, look, I think you have to – it's the comparison between this year and last year, right? I mean, I think Treylon Burks, quote, unquote, got in shape last year.
He did.
Think about how he played like in the Green Bay game and some other games. But clearly it was a rough start. So if you have this momentum now, it's an obvious contrast to last year. And also, I mean, it's hugely important. If Treylon Burks is actually going to resemble a number one receiver in his second year, that means a lot to this offense.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll have some more on the Titans coming up next, including some interesting comments from some newcomers about how things are done around here and how that could relate to injuries next year on the field. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
I mean, I should have got the hit because I'm looking, you know, they got signs on the walls, and there's a sign on the wall that it was talking about, like, expectations or something like that. And in the expectations, you see conditioning on one of them, and you're just like, oh, it looks good, but you don't. That's real. Like, conditioning is literally, like, we're doing a lot, you know what I'm saying? And you think, like, man, this is crazy, this is crazy. And it's like you just got to buy in and see the vision, you know, because obviously it's like it's been successful for a reason. And then you just got to trust it and go with it. And as I've gone with it the last 6 weeks, like, I've seen growth in myself. I've seen growth physically in myself where, you know, I feel the best physical shape I felt in a long, long time. And you think, oh, man, I'm doing so much. Like, how? But, like, all that work is just, like Coach likes to say, is building a callus and not a blister. So
that was Azeez Al-Shaair yesterday over at the St. Thomas Sports Park with the Tennessee Titans discussing the conditioning, the blistering, the callus that we talked a lot about in Vrabel's press conference in the season last year. We'll hear some more interesting comments on that from Daniel Brunskill coming up here in just a few minutes. But Al-Shaair talking yesterday, Sean Murphy Bunting with some interesting comments on that too yesterday. And obviously, Joe, when you have led the league in injuries the last couple of years, that's going to be a popular topic of conversation on how to avoid that heading into this year. But also, to your point, like, whether it was Brunskill, who we're here from just in here in just a few minutes, or Murphy Bunting yesterday, or Al-Shaair, like, it feels like the Titans and the way they approach the conditioning slash the what he was just talking about there, maybe a little bit different than some other teams around the league. And Murphy Bunting pointed that out a couple of times yesterday at his press conference.
And Murphy Bunting was pretty funny talking about, like, the sleds, like, you know, I'm out there and, you know, Vrabel's like, well, you know, how's the grass or something? He's like, wait, is he about to talk about sleds? And yep, get the sleds out. I mean, the dominant theme yesterday was that the conditioning they're doing, these guys are not used to doing this at all. Like,
yep.
You know, Al-Shaair kind of compared it to, like, college off seasons, you know, where you're waking up at 5 a.m. And, of course, that happens for college teams. Like he said, like in the NFL, it's a little bit more take care of your stuff, be a pro. You know, we're going to do some conditioning, but it sounds like this is way more intense than they're used to. My question, and we didn't get Vrabel yesterday, but the obvious question is, how different is this from, like, last offseason for the Titans?
Right.
If it is significantly different, and I have to think it's at least somewhat different, because I just haven't heard that necessarily from in past years from guys about how this is – whoa, the conditioning here. So, like he just said there, what was the term he used? The callus.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me like this is the Titans. This is one of the Titans' responses to the injuries is, okay, ramp this up at this time of year. This is where, I don't know when Vrabel talks again, but I mean, that's an obvious next question for him is, okay, and Vrabel's not going to give us a breakdown. Okay, here's last year's workout schedule, and here's this year's. You guys take your pictures with your cell phones, okay?
He'll be handing out pamphlets, brochures.
Yeah. He was in a great mood the other day, so maybe he will.
Maybe, we'll but that's the thing. See, if he's in a great mood last time, next time he's probably going to be in a crappy mood. So I'm not optimistic, but it's an obvious question, and it seems as though there is something to that, something to the idea that the callus building and just the being really hardcore this time of year is part of the plan. I think Vrabel in training camps is very modern in his approach. We've talked so many times, oh, yeah, this guy has this day off, giving people different days off. This is not, you know, Bear Bryant at Texas A&M, you know, with the Junction Boys here when Vrabel gets to training camp. But maybe he has looked at it like the spring needs a little bit more, be a little bit more strenuous. Try that. And maybe camp will be different this year, too. I don't know.
Well, and Daniel Brunskill, new Titans offensive guard, talked about the bruises and the calluses and that part of it as well yesterday at St. Thomas Sports Park. Here's what Titans offensive guard Daniel Brunskill had to say.
I mean, every team has a different philosophy. Some teams, you know, they like to keep, you know, make sure guys aren't getting injured. They're kind of just doing enough to, like, where guys, you know, are in shape and able to do the things that they can. And then, you know, there's some teams, I mean, Vrabel's got, you heard Aziz talk about callus. I mean, there's definitely a philosophy of, you know, sometimes doing not enough, just stay healthy, is good to a certain point, but then you start get going and then you see injuries happen that way. There's another philosophy where, you know, you work super hard and you kind of build that callus so then, you know, those things don't hurt as bad, and then, you know, you don't get those same injuries that you would because you weren't doing enough, kind of thing. So I mean, at the end of the day, it's just different philosophies. I mean, I think either of them really work. It's just kind of the point where it's like, what is the team doing? And this team is a run the ball team, a play hard defense team. And then, you know, we're going to take our shots down the field. We got playmakers at the receiver position that if we can get them in some space and use the run game to do that a little bit, we can make big plays. So, I mean, this is more of a team that probably needs that callus because, you know, we're going to be playing grinded out football. And then, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, tough football rather than, you know, we're spreading it out and, you know, guys are kind of getting a little bit more finesse-like. So I think with the team that we are, it's a really good thing to have the conditioning and have that callus to be able to go longer than the other team.
So that was Daniel Brunskill yesterday. Kind of interesting comments there, Joe, based on the style the Titans play and maybe that influencing the way they condition so far this offseason.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because, first of all, I know Titans fans love hearing it. We're going to, you know, as a grinded-out team, you know, I know you're excited about that.
He did say they have playmakers in the receiver room that they'll take some shots down the field with.
Sure.
That's encouraging.
But it's also interesting to think about that, and then also he talked about it as well, the tempo and the pace that they're trying to, which, again, may just be Tim Kelly. It's just something he wants to add next year, but because it's so new, there's more emphasis on it now. I don't know. But it's an interesting contrast there. Also, the word callous. You know, it's a
popular word.
Very popular word around the building. It's the new collaborate. Collaborate has made way for callous. But I think clearly they are they're going hard right now, you know, for whatever that's worth. And you would think that there would be, although so many of these injuries are just injuries that you just can't do anything about, still, you would think that there would be some adjustments in terms of trying to avoid the soft tissue stuff. And it can't just be, well, some of these guys, it's on them, we'll get rid of them, right? I mean, you got to have your own concerted effort too.
Well, the interesting part of this, like from my standpoint, looking at Vrabel, is this a mentality shift? Is this a reacting to information that has happened the last couple of years? Because he started talking about this stuff at the end of last season, when the season was coming to an end. I mean, a couple weeks before the season ended, he was talking about, you know, the 8 to 5 guys. You need to have more than that in the NFL. And when the season ended last year, he talked about, is it a bruise or is it a callus? That was the first time this word, that phrase, got brought up with Vrabel. And he talked about David Long Jr., and he talked about Christian Fulton. And this has been something that, from the last couple of weeks to last season, and now you've got kind of, I guess, either a new way of doing things or certainly a different way of doing things with Brunskill and Alshire and Murphy Bunting all talking about that yesterday coming in here. Is this a mentality shift from Vrabel? Is this him reacting to the injuries the last couple of years? Or has this been something they've always done here with the Titans? That's what I would love to know.
Yeah. I'd be interested to hear what PK says about that later, too. But it was such the dominant theme yesterday without necessarily coming up, you know, that and again, you're talking about guys coming from a different organization, so it could be similar. It just seems to me, I'd be surprised if it was exactly the same. And it makes sense. For all the frustrations of fans last year, those comments from Vrabel to me tell you this. It's like the old cliche of, well, you're disappointed in us. Well, we're even more disappointed in ourselves. Yeah. You know, we hate losing more than anybody. I mean, how frustrated must Vrabel have been after the last 2 years of watching his players be unavailable week after week after week?
Yeah, absolutely. Maddie on the text line says, $5 if you drop collaborative callousing in the next interview with Vrabel.
Wow. Alliteration. Collaborative I suppose that's what they're kind of doing, right? They're working together to build calluses. They are collaborative
callousing.
No blisters.
Collaboratively callousing? Yeah, yes. No blisters. Blisters become calluses.
Yes, they do.
It's kind of gross that we're talking about this so much. I mean, you know, I mean, like,
he brought it up, not us.
It's like when you're, you know, I think back to when I was a quote unquote athlete and how my feet used to look sometimes getting home from practice.
Well, here comes Sean on the text line.
He's like, David Long Jr., blister, get out of here.
I hope you didn't hear that, Sean.
I hope you did. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian. He covers the Memphis Grizzlies. We'll get his thoughts on the Ja Morant situations. Interesting comments last night, both from Ja Morant and NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
I at least was left with the sense that he was taking this incredibly seriously. So, honestly, I was shocked when I saw this weekend that video. Now, we're in the process of investigating it, and we'll figure out exactly what happened to the best we can then. It's, again, it's the video's a bit grainy and all that, but I'm assuming the worst, you know, and but we'll figure out, you know, exactly what happened there.
That was NBA Commissioner Adam Silver last night on the ongoing Ja Morant saga that we've discussed here on the show. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. And to help us discuss that further, we go to our 1025 the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian. Jeff, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. Good to be with you.
Good to have you with us, Jeff. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. So, Jeff, obviously a lot here. We've gone through the backstory on the show of Ja Morant and his history with firearms and the original suspension. But let's just start here. What's the reaction in Memphis been like to yet another situation now with Ja Morant just a couple of months after the first suspension that took place?
Well, I mean, it was interesting to hear Adam Silver say what he said. And I think ominous for Ja Morant's immediate future in the NBA. But, I mean, he spoke for everyone when he said he was shocked. It is impossible to get your mind around the fact that after you have cost yourself an 8-game suspension and really probably $40 million in contract, because he's not going to now get the Supermax contract because he wasn't on an All-NBA team, all because you went on Instagram Live with a gun, it's almost inconceivable to think that a couple months later you would follow that up by going on Instagram with a gun. Like, it is so beyond the realm of what is even thinkable. That, I mean, mostly it's, you know, it's recognizing the idiocy, the recklessness, all of that of the moment. And then once you get beyond that, then you start to think two things. One, what in the world is going on? And two, what in the world is the NBA or can the NBA or will the NBA do about this?
Jeff, long term for Ja, first of all, has this changed your outlook at all? What is your level of concern just about him and how he's going to proceed from here?
I think the level of concern has to be substantial because, you know, coming into this year, he was the joyous face of the future in the league. And really, I mean, over here in Memphis, we hate to invoke the name Elvis because it's wildly overdone, but was truly the biggest celebrity to set foot in this city or call the city home since Elvis. Like, he is massive. Like, the last group of Grizzlies was this, you know, that won with Zach and Mark and Mike and Tony. Like, that was a hardworking, overachieving bunch. This is a legit superstar in the midst. And he played with a joy that was palpable and contagious. And so you were looking at 5 to 10 year window of who knows what's possible. And now you do wonder, because it's actually not just these two incidents. It's another incident where he punched a high school kid. It's another incident where the family showed up at a high school basketball game and was involved in a fracas. It's another incident where the family went to Wolf Chase Mall and intimidated a security guard. It begins to look like a player who is certainly out of control and possibly unraveling. And so, and obviously not adjusting well to the demands of celebrity and all of that. And so I still think the hope for the Grizzlies is this will calm down, he'll figure it out, and he'll just play basketball. But it's a lot harder to have faith in that, having seen this again. And I think it's not unlike, you know, if you know people or have had friends or whatever who have been in spirals, self-destructive spirals, and you always hope the next time is the last time, but at some point you stop believing that. I sort of think that's what it feels like here.
Yeah, and I'm outside looking in, speculatively. I feel like maybe alcohol is part of this that, you know, should be discussed as well, Jeff. But also, like, did all these things you just mentioned? I mean, that's essentially in the recent, right? Like a year ago, did you have any indication or any concern at all that it might go this way?
It's interesting. A year ago, we had heard that Josh out on the road was a little out of control. You know, we had certainly heard those things. And it's funny how you look back at the All-Star game a year ago. There was video of him flying on a private jet, drinking and celebrating with his dad. And at the time, it was, look at that. Look at what a joyful, embracing life kid he is, you know, like, or young man, whatever. Like, and now you look back at all that, and it takes on a very different tone. So there was some thought that maybe Ja was getting ahead of himself and a little out of control. But the truth of the matter is a lot of NBA players party. You know, James Harden, obviously known for his fondness for strip clubs and whatnot. So I don't think it felt cataclysmic, but then these things started stacking up one after another after another, and it does. It looks like a player who was 4 years ago essentially an unknown, 5 years ago certainly at Murray State, essentially an unknown, who has had $200 million dropped in his lap and incredible fame dropped in his lap, and still thinks that he should be the 23-year-old who can hang out in an SUV with his buddy Devontae Pack and a gun and weed or whatever it is. You know, it's sort of like it feels like he is aggressively rejecting the responsibility that comes with his fame and fortune.
Jeff Calkins with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Jeff, from the Grizzlies' point of view, I think you've laid it out really well. We all know the player that Ja Morant is and the superstar that he is. And if you're the Grizzlies, I mean, you're hoping that he's around and that he's competitive and you're competing for championships for a long time. But obviously, this has been a very, very concerning pattern of behavior over the course of the last year or so. So how do you think the way that this has all gone down has influenced how the Grizzlies view him long term?
I think they're exasperated and exhausted and frustrated. I think what happened was, and when you have that level of star in this smaller market, in this league where the players call the shots, I think there was a real reluctance to rein in Ja originally. And I think the thought was that Denver incident, the suspension and everything else, like after that, the Grizzlies talked about, yeah, now going forward, there's going to be an accountability. And the thought was maybe now this will give us the leverage to say, hey, Ja, the way you did it wasn't working. Let's do this together a different way. And so they were hopeful that would take. And then they get rid of Dylan Brooks it's very clear they're going to get rid of Dylan Brooks. And let's move ahead, put all this drama of the past season behind us, and we can resume our bright future. And then this happens. I think there's enormous frustration. I think it feels like, you know, like Ja lied to him or spit in their face or like having said all of that, like occasionally you hear, well, is it time to move on without Ja? No, you can't replace. You can't replace the talent. And there is, there's no reason to trade Ja for pennies on the dollar, which is all you would get now. And so their futures are still lashed together. He's still under contract for a substantial contract. But I think there's a real sense of frustration with what has happened.
Talking to Jeff Calkins, one of the best columnists writing sports for a long time in this country. And Jeff, your most recent comment on this in the Daily Memphian, to read the headline, quote, "When Tennessee is awash in guns, is it fair to suspend Ja Morant?" End quote. How do you put this in context of, you know, a lot of people have brought up, you got representatives out here with their weird holiday cards, everybody holding an assault rifle. We got a gun fetish society or aspects of society. How do you put that in that context?
Well, I mean, it's a simple answer why they're different, of course, right? The Ja Morant works for an employer, the Grizzlies and the NBA, that has certain expectations, and they don't want him waving the gun around. Whereas the representatives who pose with Christmas cards with heavy armaments, they're elected by voters who apparently are charmed by that. So at a basic level, it's easy, and there's no real hypocrisy or, you know, jarring juxtaposition of those two. What I was struggling with was this, and I think Adam Silver sort of answered it last night. I was struggling with, like, okay, if we live in this country and in this state and this where you can have a gun and you don't need a permit to carry or anything else, what exactly did Ja do? Like, he had a gun in his hand fleetingly for a second. I'm not at all excusing, because I think it was idiocy, all the things we've said before. But in terms of, like, all right, now it comes punishment time. If you look at the NBA's history of punishments, discipline, if you're getting more than 20 games, it's for felonies, and it's for domestic violence that's proven, and it's for not being in a car and touching a gun, which is really, if you have to stop the video down to practically a single screen to be able to even see the gun. I'm one of these people who thinks we're a gun obsessed society, and that in that way, I guess Ja is just like a lot of America, and that he fetishizes guns and uses guns as a fashion accessory. I guess I struggled with whether the NBA would be able to really come down on him when he's just doing what so many Americans do. But I think last night when you heard Adam Silver talk about it, it didn't seem like he was going to struggle to come down hard on him. And it seemed like a heavy suspension is in the offing.
Well, Jeff, we know you're really busy, and we appreciate so much the time to join us this morning. Great perspective as always, and really appreciate you being with us.
It's always good to be on with both of you. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff Calkins for the Daily Memphian, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. You can check it out every morning at 745. We will do that next. This is Robbie and Rexrode, 1025-1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. Before we get to that, you have a pair of tickets to give away to see Bryan Adams at Bridgestone Arena on June 17th with special guest Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Bryan Adams at Bridgestone Arena on June 17th with special guest Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Joe Rexrode, the floor is yours.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, I wondered if maybe having a rant after Jeff Calkins' segment might cause me to pivot. I will just read this text real quick from the text line.
Okay.
Quote, "It's not the gun, it's the idiot. You guys may be more tone-deaf than Bud Light," end quote. Speaking of idiots. But I won't pivot on that. I won't pivot on that. I was actually also going to talk about basketball today, but I'll save that for another day, because I'm here to tell you that Marvel's not dead, and I just really wanted to come to the show today to proclaim that, because I, as you may recall, had a recent rant about Ant-Man. Was it 3? Ant-Man 3.
I believe so, yes.
which was an absolute debacle of filmmaking and made me think that and again, I loved the first two Ant-Man, so don't get me wrong. I loved the characters. I was all in on it, and then I was like, oh, Marvel has jumped the shark. The MCU, you know, hopefully they'll have some new characters. I mean, you gotta come up with some new stuff, okay? Yep. I'm rooting for them because it's been a big source of joy for my family. But then the Ant-Man 3 came, and I'm like, it's just toast. They're toast. They're just trying. I mean, at some point it happens. And then we went last night to Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And I know that I'm not, like, breaking news here, but it is great. It is a great movie, and I'm so excited to be able to sit down and watch a Marvel movie that actually does not disappoint, because it's been a long time since Endgame. I mean, Endgame is one of the great theater experiences of my life. It's been a while. It's been a rough go here. The Spider-Mans are still pretty good. I like the Spider-Mans.
Yeah, it's been very disappointing since Endgame. I actually had and I've not seen the new Guardians yet, so it's good to know that it's good. Looking forward to checking it out. I made the comment a few weeks ago that probably ought to have stopped after Endgame and just let it be and let it be dead at that point. But, you know, some of the ones that they come out with, like the most recent Thor, I finally saw it. It is so bad. Like, yeah. It's just absolutely terrible.
Yep, it was bad. Yeah, that was bad. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like if you I understand you have some great characters you want to – and I'm not against continuing the stories, but they got to be good. I mean, there's a standard you've set. And they went for a long time where really they hit at least some, like the floor was high.
Yeah.
The floor was high. And they've hit the floor a few times and it's been low. It's not quite DC low, but but it's low. But this one actually was really, really good. Two things about it. There is some animal stuff in it that I know for one of my kids was like very upsetting. So I think I should put that out there for people. And also, the soundtrack might be the greatest soundtrack. And obviously, the Guardians movies are great, but they've expanded now to different decades. I mean, the fact that they came with the Replacements' I Will Dare for the last song was like, okay, so these people are inside my brain when they made this movie. I just want to thank Marvel for, you know, for creating a good movie, because I wasn't sure it was going to happen again.
Are you going to go watch The Flash? DC movie that comes out later this summer, where I think Ben Affleck, at least to some regard, has reprised his role as Batman. Does that excite you later this summer?
No. I mean, the thing is, I still watch those two, but man, they're pretty bad.
I don't even watch them.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's kind of been an obligation. You know, superhero movies have been an obligation for me for really a long time now. I mean, you're talking... I mean, a long time, not quite two decades, but a long time. So I've gotten in the habit of, I'll check it out. Like the new Batman was actually good. I liked
it. With Robert Pattinson?
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it. I need to check it out.
That was actually.
I saw that. I saw that movie, guys. Okay.
And, wow. And you thought?
Well, it's the only superhero movie I've seen.
Okay.
Only
just,
one?
Just as a movie on its own, though.
It was good. I think it was a little too long.
It was long.
A little, probably like 30 minutes too long.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Guardians, 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's another problem. Yeah, but that one was at least like watchable. Most of DC stuff is not.
Well, but apparently Ben Affleck and Michael Keaton are both Batman in this upcoming film.
Yeah, so basically they took the
Fire
idea
me up.
Because obviously the last Spider-Man, yes. I liked that. That was cool. Bringing back Tobey Maguire and everything. So basically DC's like, let's.
It's not a big reveal.
How many years has it been?
It's been a few.
No, I'm okay, right?
Well, they didn't hide that fact in the original part of it anyway. So yeah.
Okay, man, you're making me. I don't want to. You know, I don't want to get people mad.
Oh, about Tobey?
Yeah, that's a known fact.
Yeah. So basically DC's like, ooh, let's bring back Michael Keaton. Yeah. I mean, I love Michael Keaton, but if you're going to bring back Michael Keaton, can you not soil the screen with Ben Affleck? If you're going to bring him back, then what, can we get rid of Ben Affleck?
I knew we'd get there
He was good as Phil Knight.
Okay, but here's the thing. There's 50 actors who could have been better than him. He was fine. It was a good character, but like, he's adult. Like, he's not good. He was okay, but he was the weakest part of the movie, just like he's every movie he's in. I'm friends with Matt Damon. I know you are, and he's in this movie, so you can be in this movie too. Thanks, Ben.
I did see.
Have you seen Air yet? By the way,
no. I need to watch it. I've not done a whole lot of movie watching lately. I did go watch Super Mario Brothers, which I enjoyed, so that was good.
Okay,
but I can't even remember the name of the movie. It may have been Batman versus Superman, but whatever Ben Affleck was in Batman, somehow I ended up in the movie theater watching that thing, and I was just sitting there, and you know, the Batman movies that Christopher Nolan was in charge of, with Christian Bale as Batman, and, you know, Batman Begins is okay, it's all right. But The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises specifically have a very special place in my heart. They're fantastic movies.
Incredible movies.
I was, you know, I have that in my head.
It does not
sound
good.
And I'm sitting there and I'm watching Ben Affleck as Batman in Batman versus Superman or whatever it was, or Justice League, whatever movie I was watching. I was like, this is just an absolute atrocity.
It is.
What's going on in my screen right now.
Thank you. No, those movies will never be matched. They will not be matched. Like, this new one does not come close to those, but it's good. But, yeah, the Affleck, like, that's like, it's, I don't know, it's like finger painting with your feet, you know, like, as opposed to, like, a Van Gogh. I mean, it's just, atrocity is exactly the right word.
It was awful. Now, I will say the, and somebody brought up Adam West on the text line. I do enjoy the old Batman.
Well, sure.
Adam West running around and the kablam and the pow and all that stuff.
Oh,
yeah. It's very funny to go back and watch.
No.
I mean, I did find a place where somebody's got to have, like, the old Batman series available to watch somewhere.
Yeah.
I need to find it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it's somewhere. And no, I mean, I love that stuff. It's hilariously bad, but it's also great.
So Guardians of the Galaxy is good. That's good to know. Because I'll be honest with you, of the recent films that Marvel's come out with, I was starting to give up. They've gotten pretty bad.
Yep, this is one franchise that, you know, and I don't know what's beyond this, but this is one franchise that they've actually stayed strong with. So thank goodness.
Thank goodness. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans. Looking forward to that conversation next. Make sure you tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 5:35 on 94.9 The Fan. Sounds taking on the Durham Bulls, the AAA affiliate of the Tampa Bay Rays. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.